Welcome to the OmniGamers Club podcast. I'm Mark USA.
And I'm Daniel Winter.
It's time to discuss the featured game, or in this case, featured games. It's our, I think, our very first doubleheader episode.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so like we alluded to, we're covering two games, two indies, pretty recent. They're both from this year, both available on Game Pass right now, so go check them out. If you haven't yet, we'll tell you all about them. They are Botany Manor and Harold Halibut. Shall we tackle them in that order?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you mentioned that they're available on Game Pass. We did just, on our previous episode, talk about how Game Pass maybe not the answer to games going forward. So, I mean, you obviously can go and buy these on your platform of choice, like support indie games, basically, when you can. If you like the game, go and buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. As a little addendum, is like support indie games wherever you can. Mm. But, you know, Game Pass is not all bad.
It's just a chance to try games you wouldn't otherwise have a chance to. Yeah.
Exactly, like these two. So Botany Manor, let's start us off, is from developer Balloon Studios out of the UK, published by White Thorn Games. And I've never heard of either of these before.
No, I meant to look up if this was their first game.
It's in one way or another, it's a highly polished game. So let's first talk about what type of game this is. So I would say, well, it's definitely in the first person. It's almost entirely puzzles. So it's a very puzzle focused game. Obviously, it's an indie. Both of the games we're covering today are going to be indies. And I wouldn't quite call this a walking simulator because there's literal like blocks to the progression if you don't crack the puzzles, and they have very specific solutions. So I would say it's a bit more of a retro style puzzle game, but with a very strong world, sort of world building, and interesting character representation of you yourself, the protagonist.
Hmm.
Anything else to add to that general description?
No, I think that's about right. The puzzles really do form the basic framework of this. It reminds me a little bit of some of the older games that were more like, I can't remember what they would have been called, but basically first-person puzzle games, almost like Myst, I guess.
Sure.
I never played that one, but there was a whole cottage industry of those, obviously. And like looking for hidden, not hidden objects, but exploring some facility, manor, building and looking for like hidden levers and secret things. And this is more deduction based than that, yeah. I guess. So I guess we should talk about the setting. This is set in 1890 Somerset, England. So you're playing Arabelle, who's, I believe, has come back from sort of studying abroad or traveling around, researching various plants, and is trying to write a sort of botanical herbarium, trying to catalog various flowers to publish a book, basically. And it's quite an interesting theme overhanging this in terms of various letters. You're seeing that she struggled with people not taking her seriously as a woman. Like, women can't be professionals, they can't be scientists, and so it's like time to just settle down and get married, right? So that's definitely a theme that's hanging over this. There's not much direct story. That's just sort of the backdrop as you're exploring this manor and trying to research these flowers.
Right, Arabelle Green. And obviously she lives in a quite lovely country manor. Parts of it are dilapidated, but like class is a part of this, right? Like she has obviously like has been stymied professionally because of her gender and the time in which she lives, but she comes from a place of privilege. So that part of it is interesting. Obviously she doesn't have others at that time wouldn't have had the resources that she would to pursue some of these interests either. So that's an interesting thing to consider as you're reading the narrative, which mostly comes through these letters and postcards, like you said.
Yeah, I didn't find the actual story particularly strong. Like it provided an interesting backdrop, but the actual writing wasn't particularly interesting, I thought. Almost the letters were all these huge, not quite Comic Sans, but this very anachronistic fonts that just looked very out of place, and very, very short, brief letters that didn't really add very much, I didn't think.
I think they weren't supposed to be beating you over the head. I don't think there were supposed to be like long in-depth things, because obviously they wanted to put the focus on the puzzles,
yeah,
and secondarily on this really like lush world that they set up, which is all within the grounds of the manor in which Erebel lives. So in more general detail, this is a short game. You played it recently. I don't remember how long it took me to finish, but within like half a dozen hours?
I think by most accounts is 2.5-3 hours.
Yeah. I played it over, I think, 2 gameplay sessions. So yeah, that about tracks. Once again, you're also a silent protagonist. You don't see you don't see yourself. You don't see your reflection. You don't see your hands either. But you know you're Erebel because you have a lot of like all those letters are directed to you essentially. And what are there like the puzzles are related to a plant. And sometimes you're early on in the game, you're presented with one puzzle at a time. So there's several clues associated with being able to make that one plant bloom. And I think there's about 8 or 9 of these overall through the course of the game.
Plants total.
Okay. Yeah. And it gets progressively more challenging when actually multiple of these plants are open at the same time. Because early on they're gated, right? It's like, you know, I'm literally gated within this greenhouse, the very first mission. I can only deal with this one plant, right?
All the clues here all relate to this one plant. There's no red herrings, there's no fluff or distractions. Yeah. Everything you see is related to this one puzzle.
Yeah. And later on, they give you access to a couple plants at a time, and or eventually like 3 or 4 plants at a time. And that is, I think, the primary way that they make the puzzles more challenging, is that you aren't quite sure if this clue that you picked up is related to which of the 3 or 4 plants that you have still sort of open and unresolved.
Yeah, you do get a bit of overlap by the end there with finding clues for multiple plants in one room.
Right. And of course, you do have this virtual book, this like literal herbarium that you mentioned earlier. You're sort of filling it out as you go. And it acts as your sort of mission tracker. But I thought the mechanism that was kind of cool was the like associating, you can manually associate a clue with a plant, which is very straightforward when there's only one plant, you know, all of them relate to that one plant. But when you have several of them, you might have 3 or 4 plants that are open and you might have 20 clues or more. And it's quite confusing which is associated with which. So you kind of have to intuit which is related to what. Some of them are more obvious than others.
Yeah, I never had a huge problem with that. A lot of it largely came down to process of elimination, because there was never any extraneous clues. If you have 2 plants and you assign all the clues to one, then all the remaining clues are all going to be for the second plant. There's nothing left over.
But you only know that if you lock all of the clues associated with the one plant.
Because, and it's a nice little confirmation that you're on the right track. You got it right. These are the clues. You're onto something.
Right. And I thought that was interesting and clean. And say there's 4 or 5 or 6 clues associated with one plant. Once you get the 6 that are correct, the spots just sort of lock down. This color fills in the design of the plant. But you may have locked down all the clues, but you still haven't literally made the plant bloom.
Yeah, and when you do get the plant to bloom, it sort of illustrates, colors in this little nice little illustration of it. And that was very satisfying, seeing the actual journal filled out over the course of the game.
Right, yeah. And that is like the beating heart and core of this game, is that herbarium. So in that sense, mechanically and narratively, it's really tied well together, I thought. And funny enough, you can get all the clues locked down before you make the plant bloom, but you can also make the plant bloom before you have all the clues locked down. So you can, sometimes it's just really obvious.
Yeah, because sometimes these clues is just a name, right? It might just be article in found in bedroom, and you don't remember exactly which article was which, right? So it might.
Yeah, that part I wish. Faster
to just go and do the thing.
That part I wish was connected a little bit better. And maybe they did that on purpose because this is it's taking place in the 19th century or something like that. And it also just extends the gameplay time of the game. But if this was a modern game, if this was an Ubisoft open world game, in the journal there would have been like a picture of
See all the clues actually in the journal. Yeah,
right next to the title. But it didn't do that. So that one was not so difficult to overcome. You just figure it out through context clues.
Yeah.
So that's the primary, the flow of it. I think by the time you finish those 12, you're done. It ties it up in a nice bow. But I kind of liked the scope, the tight scope of the game. It was refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of talked about how, well, everything takes place on the manor grounds and it's gated. I sort of felt like the entire game was an extended like escape room.
Basically, yeah, I had the same thought. Yeah, everything feels very staged.
Yes.
All these letters conveniently left lying out, all the books open to the convenient pages to answer the question that you need, and it didn't really feel very organic in that sense. It's all there for a puzzle to be solved, like someone's literally set up a little murder mystery for you to solve.
It's very gamey, and some of those puzzles are straight out of like Myst, like you said, you know,
Like a Resident Evil manor or something.
right, and you have to, you know, you have to ring the bells in the specific order, or you have to open up the windows in a particular pattern. I think you were joking that this feels like the prequel to Resident Evil, and it basically is that. Like, it's the Resident Evil mansion, except it's during the day and nothing's coming to kill you. It's very.
I didn't hear there's a ghost in that tower, though.
that's the word. That's the word on the street. And there was a little bit of drama with some some gardener boy breaking the lawnmower or something like that. So there's not much drama to be had, except in sort of like the just kind of internalizing what the protagonist yourself, Arabella Green, is going through as she sort of becomes more fluent in growing these plants, which are presumably her life's work. And we should reiterate, by the way, these are not real plants. These are fictional, sort of like meta, like mystical,
magical
plants.
Almost.
Yeah, right. Like one of them, for instance, the very first one, so this is not a spoiler, is called like the windmill plant or something like that. So it eventually, once you make a bloom, it blooms into quite, you know, obvious like pinwheel. And I've never seen a plant that spins like a pinwheel before.
Yeah, there's some very interesting physics and rules to this world that don't entirely line up with what our expectations were, and part of the solving the puzzles are just having to figure out, well, how does this world function? And especially like all these plants have very specific requirements. Oh, they need exactly 7 grams of nitrogen or something, for example, right? And then but when they do, they'll bloom instantaneously. And so it's a little bit forced in that sense, not feeling organic, but it's just a framing work, very abstracted framework to provide these puzzles, basically.
Yeah, so if you're familiar with those old retro adventure games, not just the first person kind like Myst, but even some of the older ones like the point and click ones, or the latter day ones like Resident Evil, these will be very familiar and almost comforting. Like, I am totally of that generation.
Very cozy.
Yeah, so it's cozy for that level, but the art is beautiful, so it's cozy in that aspect. So it's surprisingly retro, but also feels like of today. I think this game is quite attractive. Like, the grounds is very sort of like impressionistic, like painterly, like low poly.
Yeah.
Kind of flat textures, but bright colors.
Very, very vibrant. Yeah, there are details there, but it didn't. Every actual detail, if it's not related to a clue, it's very blanked and sort of not coloured in. Right, the world is very just flat unless it's a literal clue that stands out. So I didn't find it particularly. Again, didn't find the world particularly interesting. I think perhaps had they lent into that magical, the plants that were magical, maybe this could have been a bit more fantastical world rather than just set in the real world but with magic plants. Maybe they could have done some more interesting world building and setting there to draw you in. I didn't find the setting particularly engaging. It was just a framework, right?
For the there were a couple of touches that I thought made it a little bit more interesting. So there was a couple of cases where there was this plant that sort of blocked your passage. It was a monstrosity of a plant within the house. And that part was kind of a cool sort of narrative reason why a door is locked, not just find the diamond key this time or whatever, right? That was always the terribly contrived aspect of Resident Evil games, for instance. But there were hidden rooms, and there was a little bit of history to the manor, and there was this particular side story about why this particular room was hidden.
Yeah, that sort and of background that was a nice history touch. was interesting. Yes,
right.
Yeah.
And then there was this sort of dilapidated part of the manor, and I thought it was interesting to see as part of the narrative that not everything, even though a lot of the manor was lush and beautiful to look at, not everything was rosy, as in maybe this is the Arabella, maybe she's having difficult times with money, you know, if she's trying to pursue this profession and not making any headway. There's presumably helpers and employees around, there's letters from them, but you don't see them. So what's going on? Has she finally pissed off or been unable to pay her hired help?
There are skeletons in this manor. I don't know.
Yeah. And so there's this dilapidated part of the manor, and you kind of just can't make your way through, and you have to effect some repairs yourself, gasp, as a lady of landed gentry, perhaps. So that part of it alluded to some story aspects that I thought were a little bit more interesting than just straightforward. And I don't want to spoil too much, but I thought the ending was really quite lovely. What did you think about the ending?
Without spoiling anything, it was very sweet. It gave the story some closure. The story wasn't particularly wasn't the most thrilling thing, to be honest. It's just a cozy little backdrop. It's nice to have the story there, but I never found that story particularly engaging to begin with. It's mostly just there. You're there for the puzzles. And, to be honest, the puzzles were satisfying when you solve them. I did feel a little bit led by the nose, a little bit obvious. A lot of them just felt like connect the dots. When the clues were so obvious and stand out, and then it was generally pretty clear what the connection was. And if there was ever a couple of times there was not a clear connection between two clues, it's an old trial and error thing, right? The only solution is, well, I have this one thing I can interact with. That's obviously the answer. Even though the clues don't direct me to use it, it must be that because that's what I can interact with. And it felt a little bit obvious in that sense.
Yeah, maybe that's, I don't necessarily look at that as a negative, because I did live through that era of really obtuse puzzle adventure games. And that period, adventure games were very popular because the difficulty and sort of the obtuseness, especially with some of these old LucasArts games, were the only thing that added length to these games.
Just walking around trying things. Yeah.
Yeah. There were puzzles that if you just didn't think the way that this obtuse puzzle writer author put their puzzle together, you just wouldn't have figured it out. So I, as a perhaps, a youth in those days in the 80s and 90s playing these games, I quit more than I finished of those adventure games, right? And I think that does a disservice to that genre, You know, like there's a point of accessibility where you want to let your players play more of the game. And puzzle games, love them or leave them, if you are blocked, you're blocked and you just cannot make progress no matter what. It's not like an RPG where you can grind, or an action twitchy game where you can just practice. You can't practice your way towards solving a puzzle. You just have to know the answer to be able to intuit it or not. And so perhaps my younger self wishes more of those games had a little bit more affordances to just skip a puzzle, or maybe they tuned down the difficulty a bit. So I don't think it's necessarily bad.
It definitely has pacing. Like you hit very few walls in this game. It's going to keep you going through it at a pretty breezy pace. It is satisfying solving those puzzles. I just never felt particularly clever when it generally felt pretty obvious. But it's very cozy sort of intro to these puzzle solving games. If you're a big fan of sort of escape rooms, but if you're a fan of those, this probably isn't going to be a huge challenge. But it's again. Cozy little time with some nice atmosphere.
Yeah, I think that's right. This game is of limited scope. It's also of limited length, so you shouldn't expect too much of it. But what I played of it was enjoyable enough and pleasant enough.
Lots of places to sit in the garden. Chairs everywhere.
Absolutely. I sat in every one of those benches just to see if there was an achievement or something. And something does pop up, so that's worth it. So I'll say... Yeah, I recommend this game. I recommend playing it because I love, I love that style. It's nostalgic to me, and I thought this is a really nice little taste of that.
Yeah, I prefer my puzzles to be in service of a little more in terms of stronger story or setting. I would have liked a little more from this, but again, it was a very cozy little time, and didn't overstay its welcome.
There you go.
Not strong words, but fun little game.
Yeah, we had our little journey into Botany Manor. Now, shall we go under the sea and talk about Harald Halibut? All right. So, Harald Halibut. This game is decidedly longer than the last one. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the generalities of what type of game this is?
It just came out this last month and published and developed by Slow Bros, German studio. And so this is their first game. Quite an interesting background to this. It was made over 10 to 12 years.
Right.
Basically by a very small team, just 3 or 4 people. Who are interested in stop motion. So I guess let's describe the actual game first, but they described this as a handcrafted narrative game is their words for it. But definitely in a similar vein to what we were discussing with Botany Manor, it's got some sort of point and click adventure elements, especially with the sort of the 2D walking around a space. But also a bit of walking simulator, a bit of visual novel, perhaps. You are playing the eponymous Harald, exploring a space station. It was a spaceship, I guess, now on the bottom of an alien ocean. It's a bit of a high-concept setting that you sort of piece together over the course of the game. You are basically part of a generation ship that left Earth as it was dying and traveled for hundreds of years, reached your destination only to find there was no land, crashed, and you've now been on the bottom of the ocean for 50 years. So that's all backdrop when you start the game. You are Harald, a janitor, a bit of a jobs body, just doing day-to-day tasks around the station.
Yeah, you're right. It is decidedly high concept for like a fairly mundane cast of characters, and you do like fairly mundane things, and maybe that's the commentary about this world and this story, is that, you know, even in the most fantastical situation you can find mundanity and boredom and routine. And I actually thought like the themes of bureaucracy were pretty strong, certainly at the beginning.
It's very very British school of dystopia that's all about bureaucracy and paperwork and death by paperwork, basically. Like, you need a ticket to ride the tubes, but you can only buy a ticket on Wednesdays after 4 p.m. But the office is closed. Yeah, all these extraneous rules and regulations.
Yeah. So you're right. Narrative is definitely strong in this one. It's another indie game. It's essentially an adventure game. It is in 3D engine, but most of the time you play in the sort of a side scrolling view. So you could kind of call it 2.5D. It does break out of that a little bit at points, but we'll delve into that some more later. And there are very, very, very light puzzles in this. Like, I wouldn't even say, yeah, I would hardly, they're sort of like knob turning sequences or button pressing sequences.
They're almost like WarioWare mini games.
Right. And a lot of the times, some voiceover, like the companion you're with or the person that's giving you the task, will just tell you what to do. It's kind of... Yeah.
It's not meant to be challenging by any means. Yeah. I would say there's not really any challenge to this game other than finding out where you're supposed to go.
Right. It's sort of like an interactive movie, which I suppose is the strength of the development team. But yeah, we talked about they're on the generation ship. This game has some strong themes for being essentially a fairly like light story with fairly like gentle, mild character representations.
Yeah, I know everyone a lot of people bounced off in just terms of Harold being a very mild character. He's very beige, right, both literally and figuratively, while being surrounded by fairly eccentric characters. Sort of, again, it's from the British school of funny names, right? I mean, Harold Halibut, Brenner Castlechop, I think is the corporate CEO. And you've got various wacky characters, like there's the four brothers that are all the same person, but working in different jobs around the
they're all clones. yeah. This game has the story felt quite twee at times as well, very much sort of like a Wes Anderson stop motion animation. Yes,
that's definitely what comes to mind.
Or even like Wallace and Gromit. I would say that this is almost like exactly like Wallace and Gromit, except without Gromit.
Yeah, you know? It never quite gets to the wackiness of Wallace and Gromit. Like, I expected that going in.
Yeah.
It is definitely more of the Wes Anderson school in hindsight, both in the design, the stop motion, the aesthetics, like, largely on a 2D plane, these dioramas and the way it sort of pans, but also just the focus on characters. There's this very character focused interpersonal drama.
Yeah, early on, this game reminded me of a couple others that we'd covered. We covered that game. It has two names, so this is a little bit confusing, but it was called Backbone at the time that we played it.
Yeah, that came to mind as well.
On Game Pass. I think it's called Tales Noir now.
Tales Noir, yes. Yeah.
Even though, did that developer shut down?
Yes, quite recently.
I think they did shut down, sadly. I actually kind of like that game. And also a touch of that Citizen Sleeper as well, because, you know, they're on like a enclosed station and they're doing, you know, mundane jobs and Section A and Section B and whatever, this and that. And of course, because they're underwater, obviously you can't escape that sense of, you know, like that BioShock feel, right? Like
a little bit, yeah.
It's not nearly as grand as Arcadia, I think it's called.
All run down, sort of that British sort of barely held together with tape look to it.
Right. So I don't know, like this game, I think it actually is pretty wacky. Like, yeah, it has this obsession with fish, obviously, I guess, because this planet, like, they're underwater because there's, like, no landmass, right? That's the story. So everything they eat is fish and fish-themed, and eventually that moves into culture as well because, like, obviously Harold Halibut didn't come from the Halibut family off of Earth, I would imagine. And then weird stuff, like, they're watching, like, Turkish telenovelas.
and that's stuff. The only media that was like smuggled onto the plane, I guess, or, right, or 25 seasons of Sono's Ask, I think it's called.
Yeah, in the database of yeah, and there's also a lot of like anachronistic technology. Like there's slide projectors and transparency projectors. There's these very like CRT looking displays when they do these like scientific presentations.
It feels very analog, right? Even right. though they're in space, but in theory there's like very high tech available, but it's all presented very analog.
Yeah, and the characters are quite wacky too. I didn't see the cast list, but was one of the voices done by John Hodgman?
That's interesting. I saw that in the notes, and my wife swore that that same character is played by a different podcast host, and it's neither of those. Most of the actors are well known, but very recognizable, very homey, sort of comfortable voices, I should say. Like they're not really over the top. They're all fairly grounded voices for like considering the wackiness. They're all played pretty straight.
Yeah, I thought the writing in this game, especially compared to Botany Manor, did actually kind of like attempt more. It's obviously telling a grander story in scope. And there's also, they're like every other line is like a joke, right?
Well, I don't know that the game felt very funny. It's quirky. Yeah. It's weird. I only laughed out loud once or twice. And I don't mean it as a criticism.
Yeah.
I don't think it's trying to be like a sharp comedy. It's just trying to be a little bit, and it's just a little quirky. And just largely it's this grounded character drama, and it's quite well written without being like, it's not the slapstick sort of thing you expect going into this game.
Yeah, and it's also not slapdash either. Like obviously the narrative and the storytelling is such a pivotal part of this. And I would say that at times, like I also didn't laugh out loud at pretty much anything, but you could tell that they were playing for humor and they were playing to make these characters pretty charming as well. Even, you know, some of the really mundane ones, like Harold is a handyman essentially. And there's like some of the characters are like a wiener seller, and the guy that like this has this strange obsession with winter sports, even though they're stuck underwater, and like this school teacher that always is wearing a bathrobe, but he kind of has
including long, class,
yeah,
he has Fabio like character,
exactly, right? Long flowing Fabio hair. It's this kind of weird choice, but he cares for his students, obviously, in a well meaning way. So I think they're all like this wacky, kooky set of characters. And I think it's supposed to be played for laughs, but really in a sort of understated British/German way.
Yeah, it's funny because I started out expecting it to be a lot more wacky and these eccentric, silly characters. They're all more like they're eccentric and they're all a little self-centered. Like everyone's just, and that's definitely absolutely one of the themes in this isolation, both at the bottom of the ocean but also from each other. Everyone's being very self-centered and sort of focused on their own little dramas and then gradually learning to appreciate everyone else around them. It ends up being a lot more grounded than you expect going in. That sort of wackiness really takes a back seat. And Harold in the middle as the janitor, sort of lab assistant, everyman, seems to be the only person around this place willing to help other people. He's like pretty mild mannered person. He takes everything extremely literally. You tell him to jump and he'll ask how high, but he's there to help. And I think that is the really charming part of this.
Yeah, he's sort of like swaying in the wind, right? Like he's not much of a character. And I think that's where a lot of the complaints came from, is that he's just there. And all the strong personalities around him sort of push him for
mean
better
to him in some cases.
Yeah, this one character, in fact, I think her name is Moreau. Her name is Moreau, is actually one of the first characters you meet. And she actually cohabitates this space, this strange space. Like she shares a living room with Harold anyways. And she has this very like motherly, like that's her role, right? She's intended to be this very motherly sort of like, I don't know, also like Obi-Wan kind of like mentor. character.
It's very bossy
to Harold. She's also very bossy and very like judgmental of Harold and his choices. And I thought that was like a interesting dynamic to have such a strong, overbearing character for essentially a very weak protagonist.
Yeah, but there is an arc to all these characters. If that sort of rubs you the wrong way, I think the real strength of this game is you see like Harold grows and everyone around him grows. Everyone knows to appreciate Harold over the course of the game. Yeah. There's some really fascinating themes of like interpersonal drama.
Yeah, the story goes someplace, like literally. Hmm. And it takes about 13 hours, so it's considerably longer than the last game.
It is a slow crawl, yeah, and a lot of people won't have the patience for that. And I think that's the big... That's the issue that most people will struggle with this game. I mean, mixed with the lack of challenge or puzzles, as we said, it's basically just 13 hours of narrative.
Yeah.
There's very rarely even a choice in narrative in how you push things forward.
Yeah. You and I both beat this game. I beat this at like 2 a.m. last night. So it's very recent in my mind. But you're right. Like the one thing that I would push against your description earlier of a visual novel is that unlike actual novels, you are presented with choices in visual novels. Very rarely presented with any choices in this game. Like there are some few pop-ups, which I think you can probably count on one hand or at least two, of where you're given like text choices. And basically you can't advance the scene unless you choose all of them anyway.
Yeah.
So that's not a choice at all, right? And quite oftentimes you will walk into a room or even be locked into a room or walk down a corridor and there's only one button you can push. So the gameplay was a considerable disappointment. Like I thought there was going to be more game here and I was soon dissuaded of that opinion. I soon realized that wasn't the case. There's basically one stick for moving around, one button for interacting, and optionally you can press a button for running.
Oh, there's a zoom button that I only found out at the very end of the game because there's no tutorial for this game. It just throws you in it without even telling you what the buttons do. And I would have liked that. There's very few buttons, but I would have liked to know what they do.
Right. And actually, if you do press one of those few buttons at the wrong time, you will just like skip past some dialogue, which I actually didn't happen that often, but I had to restart a sequence. So it was actually good that I was able to do that. So really low on gameplay, really strong on story. And at times, I'm not exaggerating. I literally was dozing off, not just because I was playing at 2 a.m.
That's fair. Yeah, this game isn't going to be for everyone. You have to have some patience going into this. You have to be kind of know what to expect, I think. I think what the story is there is really strong. I'm not going to say that it should have been 13 hours. I think it probably could have been shorter.
Right.
It could have been more edited. It could have had more of those mini games. Some of those mini games are quite really creative, not challenging, but interactive in creative ways. There's quite a fun one with stacking boxes that plays with perspective in some fun ways.
Right.
But I mean, we look at your average AAA open world game and how much filler, how many hours of just ticking off boxes and icons and a map is there. Here, all of that extra time, even if it's not like super edited, all this time is towards a story. It's to a purpose, and it's all beautifully crafted. I want to talk some more about just how this game looks, for one thing.
Yeah, the game looks great. It's obviously handcrafted, and I was reading a little bit, and it is stop motion aesthetic. Like it's literally stop motion.
So these are all the models, every backdrop, every character, everything you see in the game is handcrafted in person. Yeah. But then photogrammetry, I think it's called. They basically take a 3D photograph, import it into whatever game engine, and then they animate it using motion capture.
Right.
So it's not stop motion, but all the models are real. You can see the scuffs on all of the models. You can literally see the artist's thumbprints on the all the work that's gone into making
it's
these.
It's handcrafted, but it's not hand animated.
Mm.
So, for instance, there's this like quite obvious like bare light bulb in Harold's bedroom. And because you're on a ship in the ocean, the station is sort of swaying at all times. And so this bare light bulb is like swinging, sometimes like around Harold's face. And there's also this kind of ominous glow, green glow coming from the ocean, the window behind him. So you get this interplay of light in and around his face, his body, other things in the scene. And I think some of those would have been like really just inconceivable technical achievements to stop motion animate those. And they were able to do them much more simply, I imagine, in a 3D engine with lighting models there. But that's no knock on how like beautiful the inputs are.
Mm.
For instance, they leave the station a couple of times to one notable other set piece that's off of the station. And it's just like this weird mishmash of colors and shapes and textures. And you're supposed to feel out of sorts, right? Like the station's so gray and green and beige, and this one is just like every other color spattered against the wall. And it just looks like, I don't know, it looks like folk craft. It's really, really quite beautiful.
Yeah, like it's incredible depth to all of these sets, especially when you know they're handcrafted, and both the depth of the multiple layers, the lighting is all just really, really beautiful. And like you said, every frame of those 13 hours, you were seeing absolute artistry. And I mean, and that's, you can say that about any game. Like, obviously, every game takes a lot of work to make here.
Yeah.
But this is such a unique sort of, you can see the hands that crafted this in a really beautiful way. Even when you're backtracking, like I know backtracking has become a real dirty word, and you do a lot of it in this game, but you just appreciating the world, and you really get to feel for it as you're going back and forth. You really get to live in Harold's shoes here.
Right. Yeah, I didn't feel too bad about the quote-unquote backtracking, because I think it sort of reinforced the theme of the game, right? It's like they're trapped.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're trapped in this space station. You get everywhere through this tube system, which is actually kind of convenient. Like, there's only like two or three things to do on each floor, so you get to know what each of the floors does fairly intimately. And even if you are seeking out a character based on your past interactions with that character, you can sort of intuit where they're going to be. There's only a couple of options of where they're going to be.
And some fun little interactions or achievements if you do things out of order. And there are side things to see, like a few little side quests and or other interactions.
Yeah, the side quests, I thought, I had hoped they would be more frequent and more had a little bit more depth to them. But, you know, I like, for instance, there's this part, most of the time you only ever have one mission, and you will have this like very strong, you have this sort of like Pip-Boy type of interface. You don't have it physically on you, but
digital
you
journal,
pull up the button. Yeah. It's like a PDA, and you have a literal to-do list. And obviously lots of games have that, but if it's a literal to-do list with one item, you know, you don't have a lot of variation or choice there. And that sometimes you have two or three items to do. And at one point, you're sort of given like this additional list of tasks to take over. And I thought, oh, wow, this is when it's going to branch out. This is when they're letting me go off the rails a little bit. And I was soon, you know, disappointed by the result of there. Those things were optional, but they were just like such a drop in the bucket that they didn't really take me off the track at all. They were just like one additional thing I could do while I was going through the main mission.
I did think there was some pretty cool character development in those side stories. It's like, it's largely getting to know the side characters more. There's especially good one with the mailman.
Yeah.
Not to spoil much there, but I thought that whole quest line was pretty heartfelt and has a lot of heart, more than you expect from the sort of the wacky eccentric characters that this game has.
If you dig into it a little bit, you will see an interesting side to each of the side characters, which is more than you can say for
the hidden depth here.
Lots of games.
Yeah, and like I said, you do see a lot of development over the course of the game. These aren't one-dimensional characters. If you don't drive with them early on, there's like a point to that, right? There is an arc that you've played out here, and it takes a while to get there. It's very much in the sort of old school, like the sort of 70s, 2001 sci-fi of sort of slow, contemplative, character-driven work. It's not a wacky space adventure, but what's there, it has a lot of heart and artistry.
Yeah. I want to touch upon a couple of things that really did strike me in a positive way about this game. Mm-hmm. So we said that pretty much like 90% of the game are going to be side-scrolling or in very like set up camera angles, sort of mm-hmm. reminiscent of some of those games we talked about in the early sort of 3D era, like Resident like, Evil
Monkey
games.
Island.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But at some point, some very obviously break out of that side-scrolling view. And you're either going to be in first person in this one bespoke sequence, or you're going to be third person behind Harold. And in these sequences, I think they're intentionally meant to be jarring and often to really
very
strong effect.
Yeah.
And in invariably in each one, I was sort of like shocked when you're given the ability to turn around and you actually see, oh, this corridor? I thought they only did half of it, but you can actually go down this corridor and see the other side. So like they designed this whole other aspect of what could have been a very, you know, simple 2D, like, you know, like a cartoon show set, you know, like the Flintstones house or something like that. No, it was
the sitcom filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Right, yeah. Right. You can actually see the fourth wall. It was really impressive and jarring. And I thought the strongest part of the game was in the last quarter or 20%.
It does escalate towards the end, yeah.
Yeah, the story picks up. It sort of arcs into a crescendo and it enters this sort of storytelling and also gameplay sort of climax where there are some gameplay sequences that, although not very challenging still, still made me feel, it made the world feel more expansive. They reminded me a lot of some of there were these sort of like meditative sequences that made me think of some early PlayStation art games. Like, I don't know if you played Journey or Flower.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Like some of those really made me feel like, oh, like it's that.
It's very raw uplifting emotion and sort of almost transcendental sort of experiences just through interaction.
Right. So like you will reach those highs eventually, even though most of this game is sort of like a slow slog. It does reach a crescendo narratively and gameplay wise that I thought was really powerful and worth it. And I wish that was just a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's like any complaints I have about this game are large because I feel so strongly about what is there that I wanted a little bit more. A little more pacing, a little more of those mini game sort of interactions to shake up the monotony a little bit. But everything is there. Like I said, it doesn't entirely cohere together, but even in the cracks, you can see the artistry that's on display here. So I do think this really is a special game. We were talking in our previous episode about AAA game development and everything right now. And I've been reading an interesting book lately called The Video Game Industry Does Not Exist. And it's talking about how the game industry as we know it has so much come to be defined by economic standards. The success of a game judged entirely on its sales, right? And the development of games as a technical process rather than an artistic one. And I think this is a fantastic counterexample to that about how other ways that games can be developed. I mean, this game was developed over 10 years with a lot of like government grants, and they had a failed Kickstarter at one point, but had to like basically fund money from various other ways. And I mean, and they were working on it part time, or they were doing other things. It was not their sort of primary job for most of those 10 years. It's just it literally is an art project that they've been working on for a decade. And so it's an incredible feat what they have.
Right. Yeah. If this was a Microsoft first party studio, they would have canned them 6 years in, if that. No,
yeah,
just joking.
I mean, that's like, we discussed Backbone, and Backbone, it was similar in being a very small team that was rushed out the door. And that you could see, the moment where the funding cut the game. We ran out of money, get the game out there. This game is done. It is a very, like, it feels like a whole object, right? It does not feel rushed or unfinished in any way.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It is, I'll say this since it sounds like we're coming to the end, but I would say that it's not an unmitigated masterpiece, but it is memorable and special. Yeah. And it will stay in my memory for a long time, I think.
It's doing something very different, and I have every respect for that. I like I said, it's not for everyone by any means, but I have a lot of respect for it doing something different, having something to say in a unique way. And yeah, it will definitely stick in my mind, I think.
Yeah, having talked about two shorter indie games on this episode, it makes me think comparing them is interesting, because while they're both puzzle-y story like games, I think that Botany Manor is probably the more polished game like game, but it's sort of everything it does is light and mild, and the impact
empty
it has is light
to me. And I can see people complaining that...
Yeah, I think it's a complete thing. It's just, it's the scale of it is just so much smaller.
Yeah.
The scope of it is so much smaller.
I absolutely see people debating over whether Harold Halibut is a game. There's no... I took a course in university that basically defined games as a series of interesting choices, which is absolutely a really interesting way to frame games. But there is other experiences outside of that. I mean, this is... Whether it's a game or not, this is interactive fiction that utilizes that to some really interesting ends. Like, people will say, oh, it should have been a movie, but it's not a movie. It is what it is. It's the piece of art that the creators decided to make. And there are, like, even if you're just Harold walking back and forth throughout the space station, like, you are experiencing something different than where you're just sitting in front of the, you know, TV checking your phone.
You know, it's sort of, I mean, I think there's truth in both of those opinions. I think it is a fixed story that you cannot impact very strongly, but you can interact with it and you can exist within that world. In, I guess the closest comparison I would make is going on like a really good like Disneyland ride, you know, like going in that Monsters Inc. ride or going on Star Tours or something like that. Is like, ultimately you're shooting at things or you're pointing lights at things or you're spinning around or whatnot. You're not changing the world, but you're seeing it slightly differently from the person sitting to your left. Mm. And you're also seeing it differently than the person that rode the ride 10 minutes before you, because like, you being in that space in that world makes you look at it differently. And that's what you can do with interactive media. You can't do that with cinema, because other than sitting on the left side or the right side of the audience, the cut you're going to get is the cut you're going to get, right? You literally can't change anything. Yeah, I'm glad we played both these games.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great time for indie games, as we discussed. I'd like to see them all get some more love and success. And I'm very curious what both these studios work on next.
Right. So if you have some cash, go support either or both of these games. So you know what sounds more interesting to you. They're both worth checking out, in my opinion.
So if you have any questions or comments for us, you can join the club and you can email us at omnigamersclub@gmail.com or at the website omnigamers.club.
That's right. And what game will we be talking about next time? What board game or analog game?
Well, I think we're going to take a look at Binding of Isaac, the card game. So that we've been talking a little bit about roguelikes these last couple of episodes, and so this is Binding of Isaac was like probably my favorite roguelike, the video game, and now we'll both be looking at the relatively new card game version of that and seeing how the roguelike experience translates to the board game table.
Yeah, let's check it out. Let's see if we can have some soul-shattering experiences inside that game and try out this newfangled thing people are calling roguelites. I hear good things.
Excellent. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Thank you, Mark.
And thanks for watching on YouTube now. If you haven't checked us out on video form, go check us out on YouTube, where we're posting videos every week.
You two can watch my cat licking my board games.
Right. And I have a color-changing Pac-Man. I mean, ghost. That's pretty cool. All right. Good talking with you, Daniel. Until next time. All right. Everyone out there.
Have a balanced diet of games.
Have a balanced diet of games. Yum, yum. Bye.
Bye.